In 2001, I published a study that was entitled The Medicalization of Female Circumcision, Harm Reduction or Promotion of a Dangerous Practice. In this paper, I argued that up until that time, the debate over medicalization of FGM had often been cast in moral rather than scientific terms. The key question had been, should we protect the health of women at the expense of legitimating a destructive practice? I argued that we might separate moral questions, which are the realm of bioethics, from empirical questions that could be examined through scientific evidence. Some of the empirical questions that I outlined at that time included the following. What are the risks of adverse physical and psychological outcomes? Does medicalization reduce the risk of harm? And does medicalization counteract efforts to eliminate FGM and reduce rates of abandonment? At that time, I argued that we did not have adequate empirical data to answer these questions, and I concluded that there was not sufficient evidence to either support or oppose medicalization on scientific grounds. I called for further research to generate sound scientific evidence. I now return to these questions and ask, over this period of time, what evidence has been generated and how does it shed light on the debate over medicalization of FGM. In the analyses here, I focus on this third question. Does medicalization counteract efforts to eliminate FGM and reduce rates of abandonment? First, I want to be clear what I'm saying when I talk about the term medicalization. Here I'm going to be using the term as it's defined by WHO, which defined it as a situation in which FGM is practiced by any category of healthcare provider, whether in a public or private clinic, at home or elsewhere. In the literature, this term is sometimes used a little bit more broadly. Sometimes it's used to describe things such as giving out prophylactic antibiotics or anti-tetanus injections or dispensing clean disposable razors. In some places, there has been, quite controversially, training given to midwives or TBAs. And in certain settings, although this is not technically considered medicalization per se, health professionals have, in some cases, been reported to encourage less severe forms of cutting in order to reduce the risk of complications and avert drawing attention to their practice. Milder forms of cutting have also been endorsed, in some cases, by religious leaders in places such as Somalia, and also supported by NGOs and others who favor medicalization as a temporary transitional measure for those not yet ready to abandon FGM. We heard about the American Association of Pediatrics proposal that was also rescinded already as well. So there have been a number of policies and proposals regarding FGM. Egypt is unique in terms of, to my knowledge, having been the only African country to have formulated a policy to regulate rather than ban medicalization in order to improve the safety of what was viewed as an inevitable practice. The Ministry of Health issued a 1994 decree lifting the ban on performing FGM in public hospitals. Shortly afterwards, this policy was reversed, and it was banned in both state and private hospitals. What some people have described as a loophole in this policy was then tightened by a 2007 ministerial decree, and this was bolstered in 2008 by a law making it punishable by imprisonment or fine. Egypt's not alone in criminalizing medicalization of FGM. Currently, 24 countries have laws banning FGM, and five of these countries have specific penalties designated for healthcare providers who can be imprisoned or fined or risk losing their medical license. Staunch opposition to medicalization has long been central in efforts to eliminate FGM. The United Nations agencies first condemned medicalization in 1979, and numerous medical organizations have also endorsed this stance. So public policy and opinion around the globe are now aligned with opposition to all forms of medicalization. The issue I now address is the claim that has been forwarded by some opponents of medicalization, namely whether medicalization impedes progress toward abandonment. This is tiny, so I'll just say to examine this, I drew on nationally representative surveys, MICS and DHS surveys, and the Sudan Household Health Survey. I was the author of the UNICEF 2003 statistical report, and I draw the data from that. Nearly all surveys asked women of reproductive age between ages 15 and 49 about their own FGM status and about who performed the cutting. These are self-reported data that need to be interpreted with caution. Women were also asked, who had at least one living daughter, were asked the same questions about at least one daughter. And they were also asked their opinions about whether the practice should continue. So some of these are a little bit difficult to read. If anybody would like to see these figures, I'm happy to share them. But first of all, what do the data tell us about who performs FGMC? Nearly all surveys have collected information on the type of practitioner. Here it's classified as either a traditional practitioner or a healthcare worker. The majority of countries, FGM is performed by traditional practitioners. The notable exceptions are Sudan and Egypt, where the majority of women or girls are cut by health personnel. In Egypt, 72% of mothers report that their daughters were cut by trained medical professionals. In other countries with substantial rates of medicalization include Kenya, Nigeria, Guinea, and Djibouti. The next question is, what is the association between current levels of medicalization and the prevalence of FGM? What I was trying to understand is whether medicalization is more common in countries with high prevalence rates of FGM. This figure shows that the association between medicalization among daughters and the prevalence of FGM. And what we see is that the prevalence of FGM is not nice and neat correlated with levels of medicalization. There are high levels of medicalization in both high prevalence countries, such as Egypt and Sudan, in more moderate level countries. There are also low levels of medicalization in countries across the range of prevalence rates as well. What did I do? There. So one of the things that we're interested in understanding is what are the trends in medicalization? And what are the, and even more importantly, what are the factors that are associated with these trends? One way to discern the trends is to compare levels of medicalization between women and rates of reported medicalization among daughters. The data reveal a clear trend in medicalization that is higher in daughters as compared to women. The trend is most pronounced in Egypt, where medicalization rates among daughters are almost twice that among the adult women. The trend is smaller, but still pronounced in several other countries: Sudan, Kenya, Nigeria, Guinea, Djibouti, Iraq, Yemen, and Ghana. So one of the questions that I'm interested in is whether medicalization counteracts efforts to eliminate FGMC. So we have to figure out how are we discerning trends in FGMC. There are several ways to do it, but one way that is useful is to look at FGMC across five-year age cohorts. This goes from the oldest age cohort, 45 to 49, down to ages 15. And you can see that in some countries, FGMC is fairly stable. And in other countries, the colors look a little bit funny, but the one that is going down most precipitously is in Kenya. So one way we can quantify what the changes are is to look at the ratio of the prevalence in the 15 to 19-year-old cohort to that of the 45 to 49 and see how this is associated with rates of medicalization. So these are the ratios. There's a no decline in the prevalence between the youngest and the oldest age cohort results in a ratio of one. A decrease in the ratio indicates the magnitude of this reduction. The greatest reductions are seen in Ghana, Tanzania, and Kenya in prevalence of FGMC. This figure shows this association. Countries with the greatest decline in FGMC across age cohorts is in Kenya, and it has a high level of medicalization. However, there are other countries with a precipitous decline in FGMC, Ghana and Tanzania, that have low levels of medicalization. By contrast, high levels of medicalization are found in two countries with very little decline in FGM, Sudan and Egypt. In other countries with stable rates of FGMC, rates of medicalization is actually quite rare. So overall, there's just no clear association. So the main question that we're interested in is really, does medicalization counteract the reduction in the prevalence of FGMC? Cross-sectional data are not ideal for answering this question, but insights can be gained by examining countries for which we have repeat survey data. Discernible changes in medicalization are found in only two countries. There are only two of the 11 countries with which we have data for which we see medicalization rates changing, and these are Egypt and Kenya. In Egypt, the percent of daughters cut by health personnel has steadily declined from 55% in 1998 to 77% in 2008. At the same time, the prevalence of FGM among women aged 15 to 19 has shifted only very slightly, declining from 97% in 1995 to 91% in the 2008 survey. These changes have occurred over a period of intense debate and scrutiny about Egypt's official policy on medicalization as well. During this period, we see that there's been increased medicalization, rising from 34% to 41% in this interval. At the same time, there's been a precipitous decline in rates of FGM at the national level, dropping from 38% to 26%. These findings suggest that medicalization did not counteract factors that motivated abandonment of FGM in Kenya. A significant and rapid decrease in the prevalence occurred while the rates of medicalization were high and rising rapidly. However, these data do not allow us to test whether the decline in FGMC might have been even larger had health professionals not been performing FGM. Nonetheless, it's clear that in Kenya, medicalization did not entirely counteract factors that motivated significant levels of abandonment. We don't know what degree medicalization was responsible for prevalence rates in directly or indirectly. Another question that I ask is, does medicalization influence support for the continuation of FGM? Does the availability of supposedly safer cutting options result in continued support for the practice? Messages on health risks have been a cornerstone of anti-FGM campaigns for decades. We wish to know whether the concerns about health risks and the public messaging about this has motivated a desire to abandon FGM, or whether it motivates continued support for the practice. This shows the percent of women who report that they support the continuation of FGM. And unsurprisingly, support for the continuation is highest in countries with a high prevalence of FGM. Many analysts find it useful to contrast the prevalence of FGM to levels of support, arguing that in settings in which support is significantly lower, this may be a site that's well prepared for intervention and coordinated abandonment of FGM. So we can create a ratio between prevalence and support to get at this lag, at this discrepancy. This figure shows this association between this ratio between support and prevalence and medicalization. The decline in the ratio of support to prevalence means that support has eroded. We expect to see that support erodes least where medicalization is common, if that is in fact a true hypothesis. In fact, we do see a fairly high level of continued support in one setting where medicalization is common, Nigeria. But in Kenya, Sudan, and Egypt, continued support for FGM has eroded despite the existence of high levels of medicalization. So, what are the most common types of FGM? Collecting data on type in self-report surveys is extremely challenging and, needless to say, far from perfect. Most of the surveys on type of FGM, it's classified into four main categories. No flesh removed, meaning nicking. Cut some flesh removed, or sewn closed, or don't know. Nicking is found in a high frequency only in Eritrea, self-reported by 46% of the women. Being sewn closed, which likely corresponds to type 3 FGM or infibulation, is the most common self-reported form in Somalia and in Djibouti. Elsewhere, cut flesh removed, likely a combination of type 1 and type 2, is the most common form self-reported by women. So the next question then is there a trend toward reduced severity in cutting? To examine this trend, we can compare the type of FGM performed on women and their daughters. Almost all countries for which we have data on the type of FGM performed on women and daughters show no significant change. There is a trend toward reduced cutting in Somalia, which is interesting because this is a place where Sunnah circumcision, as it's called, is being promoted, but it's not statistically significant. The only country with a statistically significant change in the type of cutting is in Djibouti. The frequency of sewn closed is significantly lower among daughters than among women who responded to the surveys. Notably, the presence of FGMC in Djibouti is high and is not declining. This indicates that a trend toward less severe cutting can occur in a context where the prevalence of FGMC is high and not declining. Whether this reduction in severity of cutting is associated with medicalization is not clear. Looking beyond Djibouti, it's clear that there's a great deal of stability in the type of cutting that is changing in very few places. So, pulling this all together, what conclusions can we make based on these data? The data show that FGMC is most commonly performed by traditional practitioners, meaning traditional circumcisers, traditional birth attendants, or any other type of traditional practitioner. There are six countries with high rates of medicalization, and these are increasing. And these are Egypt, Sudan, Kenya, Nigeria, Guinea, and Djibouti. overall, there's no clear association between the rate of decline in FGM and in medicalization. Data from repeat surveys in Kenya and Egypt reveal that the rates of medicalization have increased sharply at the same time that the prevalence rate of FGM is declining modestly in the case of Egypt or rapidly in the case of Kenya. These cases suggest that medicalization does not completely counteract factors that lead to the abandonment of FGM, whether it slows the rate of decline in these countries or elsewhere is not clear. Nearly all countries for which we have data show that support for the continuation of FGM erodes prior to the prevalence and may herald the abandonment of the practice. Importantly, the data show that where medicalization rates are high, there is a substantial discrepancy between prevalence and support. This suggests that the availability of presumably safer cutting options does not halt declining support for FGM. The statistical data show no association between reduced severity of cutting and increasing rates of medicalization. Together, these findings suggest that medicalization poses neither a uniform nor an insurmountable barrier to the abandonment of FGM. Hence, there is not sufficient scientific evidence to warrant opposition to medicalization on the scientific grounds that were investigated here. But important questions remain, such as on the degree of harm averted by various forms of medicalization, about burden on healthcare systems, and as well as on ethics, which we just heard about. Further insights may be gained by additional analyses of the available data and warrant further investigation.